Hello everyone and welcome to the Talk Music Podcast, where we chat everything and anything related to the world of music and occasionally focus on topics a little bit unrelated. My name is Scott Cowie. I am a drummer turned comedy singer-songwriter and apparently now a podcaster. You're going to hear me chat to many different people, but more often than not, it will be fellow musicians having conversations about their careers and lives within, arguably, the greatest art form in the world. And you get this for free each and every week on scottcowie.com, on Stitcher Radio, and now on iTunes. So please rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, let them know what's going on over here. But for now, enjoy the show. Guest this week on the podcast, Jeff Rouse. Fantastic musician, brilliant new side project on the go. He plays bass, he plays guitar, he teaches, he tours the world. There's nothing that this guy cannot do. And he's a nice guy with it. Brilliant stories, great chat. It's all coming up. Before we get to the interview, I am joined now by the 5'1" violin player extraordinaire. Are you 5'1", Nora?
I am.
The 5'1" self-professed greatest violin player since Stefan Grappelli and Van Gogh. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and show the type of respect that this person, Nora Germain, not only demands, but she commands and demands. Ladies and gentlemen, Nora Francesca Jillian Germain.
Hello! Nora. Hello, world. I'm so happy to be on the world with you.
I'm so happy to be on the world with you. That sounds like a line from a song from the 30s or something like that. Nora, welcome to the show. How is Nora Germain?
I'm feeling great.
As we speak, and this isn't a cheap plug, this is genuinely true. Nora and I were talking off air. That's a term that we use in the professional world. And she was unaware that you could donate to this podcast. No, you can. ScottCowie.com. Click on the donate button. If you want to help support independent music, independent individuals like me who are independent and trying to do things in an independent fashion with independent motives, then you can click on the donate button and you can give me some of your hard earned cash so I can do stupid shit like this and get
Scott,
paid for it.
I want you to know I have no idea how much money I'm giving you because it says here I'm giving you 10 pounds or maybe it's $10, so it'll be...
Right. You won't have an awareness of the exchange rate. So, see for every dollar, it's £50. That's the exchange rate. So, see if you just give me £100, that's fine. It'll be equivalent to like $2.
Okay.
Great. Nora Germain is donating as we speak, ladies and gentlemen. And we don't have any love advice this week. There's some emails, but they're, quite frankly, they're quite creepy and I'm not going to read them. So, S. Cowie Music.
That's funny. Sorry.
Nora Germain, a lot of emails in. scowiemusic@gmail.com is the email address if you want to email in and get some love advice from the person who's built up a reputation for putting fires out all over the world when it comes to love advice. And that person is, of course, Nora Germain, the person that's currently donating to the podcast. Nora's getting all confident because she is solving problems all over the world. In fact, there's a ratio that went up on the internet recently. 95% of the people that get married in America these days have done so because they have been successful in their love life due to Nora's coaching in the love advice section of the Scott Cowie podcast that comes to you weekly.
It's true. We're reaching hundreds of millions of people.
Yes. So, I've just got a few random questions for Nora. Nora, does that sound like a master plan? I've just got some random questions for you.
Okay.
Right. Now, here we go. You ready for this one?
Okay.
What's your favourite song to play live?
My favourite song to play live right now is Mercy, Mercy.
Mercy, Mercy, Mercy. I heard you do a version with some dude playing guitar.
Yeah.
We need to cover that because I would do a better version of it than you guys did.
I love that song. It's so great. It's Cannonball Adderley and Joe Zawinul. Oh, man. I love that tune.
Who done that initially?
It's Joe Zawinul.
Oh, he was brilliant.
When he was with Cannonball Adderley.
Yeah, just after he was in Whitesnake.
Right, yep.
So, brilliant track. Oh, and I've just got a notification in my Gmail. Nora has genuinely pledged or donated to the podcast. So there you go. Nora Germain has given me some money. And it was £10. For a second there, I panicked and thought it was £100. I panicked for a second there and I thought, you know, I was trying to wind you up and kid you on. There's a couple of British terms for you. But that being said, Nora, your favourite track to play live is Mercy, Mercy, Mercy. Sorry, everybody, we're going on a little bit of a tangent here. We'll get there. I'm going to continue asking Nora questions after the interview, the very special interview coming up in the podcast. And Nora, I want you to have a think about this one while the interview is taking place. And here is the question. You ready for this?
And yes.
This is to entice you all, because as we come back from the interview, Nora will answer this question in the outro. And this is the question. This is the question. T-H-E-E question.
Yeah.
If you won the lottery, what would you spend that prize money on? You got the question, Nora? Nora? Nora Germain.
See? I got it.
Right.
Yep.
She's got it. Nora's going to answer that when we come back. Now we're going to get to the interview. It's going to be a good one. Okay, I am back on the Talk Music Podcast with Jeff Rouse. How are you, sir?
God, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. I'm doing not bad at all. Now, it's been a busy couple of years for yourself, Jeff, loads to talk about, but an interesting new side project. You got to tell us about the Guessing Game.
The Guessing Game. Well, it's something that I started 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I find myself with a little bit of extra time here and there. And Duff was out. You know, I've been playing with Duff in this band called Loaded for years. And so not only did I have a little extra time, but I had a handful of songs that I had written that didn't necessarily fit into the other things that I was doing. So kind of, you know, had some friends around town and we started to play, and it just really, really felt good and it started to work really well. And so we made a record called Holy Crow, and we just have had so much fun and such a good run with it. We just decided it was time to make a new record. So we went back in the studio and just finished Destroy It All here a couple months ago, and it came out last week. And it's a really, really great band. I'm super proud of it. It lets me be able to play guitar and sing a little bit. Yeah, it's really a great thing.
Absolutely, and I've listened to the record. It's sounding very good, very powerful, and I'm as interested as anybody is hearing the reaction to it. No doubt it'll be very positive indeed. Now, you mentioned Duff there. You've been part of Loaded for a long time now. I believe you met him in 2000. So tell us how that band came about.
Well, you know, once Duff moved back to Seattle in the late 90s, you know, kind of got sober, concentrated on his family, decided to go back to school. But Duff has always been such a music fan, obviously, that he was always around town going to shows and seeing bands. And I was in a band called Alien Crime Syndicate at the time, and he would come to a lot of shows. So we would talk, and you know, I just loved, you know, I was a huge Guns N' Roses fan anyway, and he's such a great dude. Well, I think at a certain point he went into the studio and started to record some music, because that's what he always did. And this label in Japan wanted to put it out, but he didn't have a band. So he contacted me and Mike Squires, who were in Alien Crime Syndicate. And I think with just of the premise to go to Japan just to play for a few shows. But those shows went so great, and we became such great friends that 15 years later, we're still playing together, best of friends. It's what a crazy journey. It's been great.
Great stuff. Now, the years that you've been playing with Duff, is there anything that you think you've learned from him, be it relative to music, anything about the music business? Is there anything at all that springs to mind?
Oh, I think I mean, in every aspect of what I do, I've learned. I think being in a band with anybody, you'd be stupid not to pay attention and learn from anybody that you play with, especially somebody like Duff. Especially one thing I remember when we first started is we needed to do a warm-up show before we went to this Japan. And so we went to Japan tour, and we played a show south of Seattle here. It wasn't publicized. We just went to this little bar, and there was maybe only 20 people there. And Duff, it doesn't matter if it's 20,000, 200,000, 20 people, Duff puts on the same show. He's the same guy, as much energy. And to me, that was so inspiring. And it's also the way he handles himself in interviews. He handles himself with fans, handles himself in life. He's, you know, from all the stuff that he's went through in his life, he's still remained very attached to what it is to be a musician and what it is to love to do, to play music. He's a very busy guy too. He has so much stuff he always does, but he always, no matter what, gives 100% no matter what he does. I've learned all, I mean, I could go on and on and on about Duff. He's helped me in ways that I won't even talk about. That's not even music related. Personally, the way he handles himself as a friend, just everything. I'm blessed to be a part of his life, and I can't thank him enough.
Great answer. And I tell you what, I've not heard anybody say a bad word about Duff, which is definitely a testament to him. You know, everybody that I've been fortunate enough to meet that have had any interaction with him have been very, very positive about him, you know?
Yeah. You know, I met Duff in 1991 at the height of probably the Use Your Illusion era of Guns N' Roses, and he was a different person. So to kind of reconnect with him when we did in 2000, he was a completely different person, and not, I was always wondering, I'm like, God, who is it? Because when I met him, he was just so drunk, and he's just a different person, and he's awesome. He's crazy too. I love him. He's a great man.
Okay, so you grew up in Seattle. I've never been there myself, but I'm anxious to know, what was it like growing up there and being around that scene? Obviously, a place renowned for producing great music. So tell us about growing up there and just the scene overall.
Well, it's actually such a crazy story, and I'm so blessed to have been a part of that era of the city just by chance. You know, in 1987 or something, I was at a dance club with a buddy of mine, and I saw this guy with long blonde hair giving out flyers for this show at a skating rink, at a roller skating rink. So I, you know, and there was all these girls around him, and so I'm like, what is this? You know, so we went to the skating rink, and it was Mother Love Bone, Alice in Chains, Black is Black, and Tramp Alley. And I walked into that skating rink, and there was 500 kids there exactly like me. I'm like, what the fuck is going? I mean, I could not believe it. It changed my life. From that, I just started going to see, you know, Soundgarden, all these bands that were yet, people didn't, they were just in Seattle. They weren't, their records hadn't left, you know, the city yet. You know, I think there's certain people that knew Sub Pop and all that stuff, but so I immediately got into bands and started playing. And the funny thing about it is, if you were in a band in that time period in Seattle, if you played anywhere, you were playing to sold out shows, because people were coming from all around the world just to be a part of the scene. It was so strange. It was a great way to quickly learn how to perform, how to, you know, just everything. It was chaos. So many people, and it's something I think, you know, there's probably, you know, there's been times like that in LA and the Glamoury, probably in London, you know, every big city at some point has a time period where the music scene really comes together. And I was just lucky enough to be at the perfect age at the perfect time to be a part of it here. And I've made great friends with all those guys, and I've got to see all these bands basically change the world. And at the same time, a lot of them imploded. You know, there's been a lot of sadness also, you know, because of that. But the great thing is most all those people have persevered through death and so much different stuff and are now back out still doing exactly what they should be doing. Alice in Chains guys, you know, they found William, and what a blessing. You know, they're, you know, and just, you know, Soundgarden getting back together, and, you know, watching Pearl Jam find their footing and become a band that will probably be around forever. And, you know, all these things, it's, you know, it's really cool to see. It's really cool to see.
You have to tell me about your involvement with Fozzy over the last year or two.
Oh, okay. Well, so Loaded did a tour circuit in Australia called the Soundwave. So you play all through Australia, and I think Loaded was on that bill, and Fozzy and Metallica was headlining, Garbage, a few other bands. And when you do these festival runs, you always end up, all the bands stay in the same hotel. You take the same shuttle buses, you know, back and forth to the event sites, you know. And I like to go to the gym a lot. So every morning, me and Duff would usually go to the gym. And Rich Ward from Fozzy and Chris would always be in the gym. They would get up early also, and I'd see them in the gym. And we just became friends. We played a few other what they called sidewave shows. So we'd play a small club in between the big festivals, and we played with Fozzy a couple times. And, you know, just in like these things, you just become friends with these people. And, you know, fast forward a couple years, I get a call from Rich and an email from Chris, and their bass player was having some issues, and he could no longer tour with them. And they asked me, and it literally was on a Tuesday, and they said, "Hey, Jeff, I know this is weird, but Friday we have a tour starting and we don't have a bass player. Can you learn all of our songs, meet us in Atlanta, and do this tour with no rehearsals?" I'm like, okay. So I listened to the songs, and I took two nights. I learned the whole set list. I took a red-eye flight in the middle of the night to Atlanta. And the first night, we played, like, I don't know, about 30,000 people at this Carolina Rebellion Fest, I think. And then for about a year, I thought it was just going to be probably a week of shows. And I ended up playing off and on with them for a good part of a year. And it was really fun. I mean, speaking of another great performer, I don't know if there's a better performer in the world than Chris Jericho, you know. I've developed a great friendship with him now also. And, you know, along the same lines of Duff, I don't know if there's anybody else that is as busy as Duff and or more than Chris Jericho. He does so, I mean, that guy's days are completely filled with interviews. And, I mean, he's like the eighth wonder of the world, Chris Jericho, you know. And I really, really enjoyed playing with them. And even more, I think friendships that you get within this industry sometimes are very, you know, hit or miss. Like, sometimes you'll become friends with, but these guys will probably be my friends for life now. They're really genuinely great people that are doing it for the right reasons.
No, that's great. And let me just add to that, if it's okay. I was fortunate enough to interview Chris Jericho for this podcast.
Great.
And I don't know, it was actually at the last Glasgow show that the guys did. You might have been playing. It was in March just there. I don't know if you were on that tour.
No, I wasn't, because Loaded got asked. We went down to South America and played some shows with Slash. It was Gilby's band Loaded and Slash did some shows in South America, so I couldn't make that tour.
All right, okay. Oh, it was just, I've been fortunate enough to keep in touch with Chris, and we've helped each other out getting different interviews sorted. And how he fits everything in that he's got on the go is just amazing. So to add to that, I'm with you on that one. Big credit to everyone that Jericho's got on the go. Now, your influences growing up, what were you listening to back in the day that got you started playing the guitar?
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, my parents played records, and kind of when I grew up, you know, it was kind of the era of AM radio still. So, you know, from, I didn't have older brothers. So I kind of had to find music on my own. So I grew up listening, you know, to the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and the Eagles and Michael Jackson and, you know, AM radio staples, Hall and Oates, you know. But then I quickly got into the new wave thing. I really loved The Cure. I really loved Death Cult. You know, I mean, before they were The Cult, you know, the Dreamtime record, the Love record, the Cult, the Love record was a huge influence on me. But also I also loved early Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, you know, Van Halen, all the stuff, you know, just kind of the staples of rock. But then, you know, I've went all over the place, you know, even from bands like Skinny Puppy to Christian Death to Duran Duran to, you know, I just always loved music and I've always loved discovering stuff. And so I think the one thing that I came in late maybe was the punk rock thing. I wasn't exposed to it in the town that I lived in. I didn't have those So, you know, I didn't kind of start discovering punk rock probably till the mid to late 80s when, you know, then I started to hear Black Flag and the Dead Kennedys and No Means No and these great bands. So, you know, everything that I do and what I write and play is probably influenced by everything that I've heard, you know. But when it comes to bass players, I was always inspired by the melodic bass players, you know, John Paul Jones and Paul McCartney and Eric Avery from Jane's Addiction, Duff. These are all guys that really were creatively playing things that I could pick up, my ears could pick up, you know. It was inspiring for me to try to learn how to play those things, you know. I'm inspired by so many different things.
Now, of all the people that you've got a chance to perform with, is there anybody that you haven't done so yet that you would like to be in the studio or live? Is there anyone that springs to mind at all?
I could probably think of two people right away. Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Adams.
Right. Interesting.
Those are different people. Both of them are so prolific in their writing. I would love to spend some time with them in the studio and just see what that writing process would be like. You know, both of those guys could probably put out records, you know, once a month if they had the choice. You know, I know for a long time Ryan Adams kind of did that, and so did Prince. And I've heard Prince has hundreds of thousands of songs in vaults that people will never hear. So, you know, I think he's constantly writing, and I would love to be a part of that at some point.
Well, Jeff, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. Really, really insightful. Some great stories, man. We've got to do this again at some point. And give me a shout the next time you're in Scotland.
I will, for sure.
Brilliant interview. Thank you very much for tuning in. But do not go anywhere. And I mean anywhere. Even if it's somewhere really cool. Keep your headphones on. See, if you're going down a roller coaster or something like that, still keep the headphones on, ladies and gents, because this is not only must listen, it's can't miss. The question before the interview that I asked my friend Nora Germain, and first of all, of course, we're joined again by Nora Germain. Say hi, Nora.
Hi, everybody.
Nora, a question I posed to you was this. What would you spend money on if you won the lottery, right? Now, I want to know a couple of things you would buy, but I want to know the first purchase. What would that purchase be? Hit me.
I would buy a puppy.
What would you call it?
Scott.
Is that a derogatory term against me, or is that a term of endearment?
No, I would name my dog after you. You don't think that's cool?
You broke up for a second there. Repeat that line.
You don't think it's cool for me to name my dog after you?
I think that's very cool. It's very, very cool. What else would you buy?
I would buy a yacht.
What would you buy me?
Another yacht.
Right, okay.
I would buy you that house that you sent me when you were looking at mansions on the internet. We remember last week we were looking at mansions on the internet and we were sending them to each other?
Yes.
I would buy you one of those.
Nice one. Which one?
The one that you said has a lot of rooms for that thing you like to do.
Yeah, play music. She's just having a laugh, ladies and gentlemen, right? So, listen up. How many... what would you buy... Right, your friend Genevieve, who's a mutual friend of ours, right? What would you buy her?
A hula hoop.
A hula hoop? What, like a hoop that you do the thing in?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I would probably donate a lot of the money, in all seriousness. But I would buy Genevieve. She really likes to wear pink platform shoes, like really hot pink, super high shoes. So I would buy her a new collection of pink shoes. And also, she really likes espresso shots. She drinks a lot of them every day, so I'd probably get her some really nice espresso. Or maybe just an espresso man who comes and brings you espresso in bed in the morning. Maybe I could do that. We could pay him really well.
So essentially, Nora is beating around the bush there, but essentially what she would buy if she won the lottery is a male prostitute.
I don't know. He's an espresso boy. He could make all those lovely foam designs, you know. Maybe he could even draw your face in the top of my latte. How cool would that be?
No, that's just weird. My face being in your latte, my dog named after you. Or your dog named after me.
That's my dream, though, Scott.
What?
That's my dream.
That's your dream. Weird dream. I'm going to tell everybody, if anybody's still listening to this and gives a shit, I'm going to tell you all what I would spend the money on, but you're going to have to wait a week, because we're going to tell you all next week what I would spend the hard-earned cash that I'd won in the lottery, and it's all coming up next week. NoraJermaine, NoraJermaine.com. Do what you've got to do, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.